Morning, everyone. Today we're going to discuss the relationship between pshat and drash. This is a question that a number of people have asked me over the course of this week, so I decided it would be a good discussion for our last regular shiur. And I'd especially like to thank Yehuda Frank, who's not in our yeshiva anymore, but sent me a number of mikoros on this topic and asking questions, and his questions were really very helpful in preparing this year. So we're all familiar with the concept that Torah should be explained and can be explained on many levels. Shivim panim la Torah, kipatish yifot tzelak, ma patish zem eschalik lakama nitzotzos, af mikra echad yotze lakama ta'amim. That Torah could be explained and understood on many levels. Lahavdil. I remember when I was in college, a long time ago, taking a Dr. Lee for Shakespeare, and how he showed that an intelligent or a brilliant human author conveys meaning on multiple layers, and that these multiple layers of meaning are intentional and sometimes even contradictory. You'll have one character saying something, but perhaps the nature of the poetry in or the meter or the rhymes in his statements undermine what he's saying, in which case the author is using multiple layers to convey a much deeper intention. And lahavdil, if that's true, if humans are capable of doing it, certainly it's true that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is capable of conveying many layers of meaning. However, the question that I think troubles many people is what actually happened. And this question is particularly pressing when it comes to situations where there's a contradiction between the events that transpired as described by the pshat of the psukim and the events that transpired according to the medrash. What happened? Was it what it says in the medrash, or what it says or what emerges from pshat? For now, we'll assume, we'll define pshat, perhaps we'll be more specific a little later, but we'll define pshat as what can be understood based off of the text alone. Meaning to say, the impression that you get from reading the psukim and only the psukim. Now, there's many elements to pshat. There's omek pshat. Pshat can be very sophisticated. It's not the simple reading. It's not the superficial reading. It demands of us that we look at various places throughout Tanakh where these issues came up, but nevertheless, what we get from the psukim alone versus the medrash and what that adds to us. Just to take an example, yes?
Just to throw it out there, does it matter to us theologically if it actually happened?
That's what we're going to discuss. So, to take an example that in Yana Dioma of Sfira Saomer, you might say, how does this have to do with Sfira Saomer? So first of all, let's note that the focus of our discussion, at least at first, is going to be the narrative sections. Meaning to say, there's another question when it comes to halachic sections. There we know that, generally speaking, the practical halacha is determined by the medrash. And a very interesting and important question is, why then are the psukim presented in ways that sometimes seem to disagree on a surface level with the practical halacha? If we have time, we'll get to that today in the second half of this year. For example, ayin tachas ayin. We know, of course, la halacha, that means mamon. Well, why is it that the simple reading of the psukim imply that an eye should be taken for an eye? So that's a separate question. Obviously related, but nevertheless a separate question, which we will, Be'ezus Hashem, address in the second half of today's shiur. But in the first half, we're going to focus on the narrative sections. How does this relate to a Sfiras HaOmer? So the Rush asks the following question. In Psachim, it says in the Pasuk, Tispiru chamishim yom. We all know that we only count 49 days. So, how do we explain that? And he offers a number of interpretations of the pasuk that would justify our practice. But then he says, "V'linira she'en anu tzrichim l'dchukos halalu." We don't need to rely on these shvacha answers. There's a much simpler answer. Kevan dekasav be behedia shiva shavuos tis barlach ainless por yoser meshiva shavuos umitispiru hamishim yom kashamidi shekain derech hamikra keshemagia haminyan leschum asiris pachos achas mone oso becheshbon asiris vein mashkiach al chisaron haachad. We know that we're in fact supposed to count 49 days because the pasuk says you shall count 7 weeks. It also says you shall count 50 days. The answer is that the Torah frequently rounds. How do I know that? So, kiyotze bo, kol nefesh leves Yaakov haba mitzrayim shivim. The pasuk tells us that 70 people went down to Egypt. Now, if you count up the number and the names of people that went down to Egypt, you only arrive at 69. So the Rush says this is an example of a place where you see the Torah rounding. Likewise, it says 39 Malkos. It says 40 Malkos, which is rounding for 39. It says you shall count 49 days, which is rounding for 50. And likewise, he says that you shall, there were, in fact, actually only 69 people that went down to Egypt. And that which it says 70 is rounding. Now, we all know that this explanation is against the Medrash. The Medrash answers this question differently. It says, quoted by Rashi, "Uvifrata niyata motze ela shloshim mishnayim among the bnei Leia, ela zu yocheved shenolda bein hachomos b'knisasan le'ir." So the Medrash says that there were 70, and the resolution is that the 70th child was Yocheved, born along the way to Egypt. So here we again ask our question. What's the pshat? According to the Rush, how many people were there? Were there 69 or were there 70? Do we assume that the pshat accords with reality and the drash is something else? Well, if so, then why does the drash coming to teach you? Perhaps we'll say, no, on a level of pshat it was 69, on a level of drash it was 70. And it doesn't really matter. So these are all the questions that we need to consider. And we'll return to that example a little later on. I'd like to begin with the Rishon, though, who I think explicitly addresses this point, and that is the Drashos Haran. This is a fascinating Drashos Haran, in which he begins by telling us an important aspect about Hashgacha. I'll skip from the third line. Shim lo yechazak schus adam kolkach shetishtane amareches bishvilo o shiye mushkach bashkach apratis davka ad shiyasem Hashem yisborech belibo lasos eze pal yagen ba'ado meiras amareches kol od shelo yeechad me'elu hatzidadim yischayev sheye anei sha'adamahu gam kshelo yisyaches elav kefi ma'asav ha'oneshahu. The Ran tells us that when it comes to Hashgacha, Kadosh Baruch Hu does not always intervene in an overt way to punish the sinner or to give people exactly that which they deserve. We all know lightning doesn't generally strike a sinner as he violates the Torah. Rather, there is some form of ma'areches, and this could be understood in terms of the natural world and the laws of nature, or mazel, or the like, and only if a person is particularly worthy will they be experience hashgacha, will they experience providence in a way that goes against the general ma'areches. And he writes that this explains the concept of tzadik v'ralo, rasha v'tovlo. Fascinating response. He says that one of the reasons why sometimes a tzaddik will experience suffering is because the nature of the way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu acts towards the world is that he sends something let's say a city is deserving of punishment because overall they are evil, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu will send a disease that will ravage that city, and diseases don't distinguish between the righteous and the wicked. And accordingly, he says that there will be times when tzaddikim will suffer along with everybody else, and likewise the reverse. This is part of a bigger topic that's not for today. And with this, he then talks about a really fascinating concept, which is the concept of makas bechoros, and who experienced makas bechoros. So he quotes the pasuk from Bamidbar Parakhes, Ki nusunim nisunim hei mali mitoch b'nei Yisrael, tachas pitras kol rechem bechor, kol mibnei Yisrael, lakachti osam li, ki li kol bechor b'vnei Yisrael, ba'adam uva behema, b'yom hakosi kol bechor b'eretz Mitzrayim, hikdashti osam li. The pasuk says that the Bechorim were sanctified in Egypt on the day in which I smote the Egyptians. And therefore they were designated, and later they lost that designation after they sinned with the golden calf and were replaced with the Levium, and thus there's a mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen. Now, the Ran asks an obvious question. The Pasuk here, as well as many other places in the Torah, reminds us that every Jewish Bechor must be especially grateful for having been saved in Egypt and not killed in the Makas Bechoros. And he says that Zehu Inyan Matmiya Lama Zacha Bahem Mipnei Shehika Bechorei Mitzrayim. Why is it that the Bechorei Yisrael have to have gratitude for being saved and not being destroyed along with the Bechorei Mitzrayim? Why should they have been killed? He gives an analogy. Imagine a king going up to some innocent person and saying, "You owe me your life." Why? Because I didn't kill you when I executed that murderer. So, you can't answer a king. But you'd probably be thinking, this king is a little mad. Why should I have been killed? I didn't commit any crime. The murderer committed a crime, and therefore the murderer was killed. I am innocent, and therefore, of course I shouldn't be killed. Well, that's exactly what we're doing here. We're saying that the Bechorei Yisrael must have Hakaras HaTov because they weren't killed along with the Egyptians. Well, the Egyptians were deserving of death. The Jews were not deserving of death. Therefore, the Jews shouldn't have been killed. So why do they have this Hakaras HaTov? And he answers this question based off of the premise that he elaborated upon earlier. I'll read now from the bolded section. Avala tshuva she'ein ha-po'alim ha-magiyim ba'olam ha-tachton l'ish-ish al yedei sibos pratios. The things that happen in this world are not based off of specific causes, aval al yedei sibos kololos, but rather through general causes. She'ein ratzon Hashem Yisbarach she'ishtaneh ha-teva kafi ish-ish. Because it's not God's will that teva change for each and every person. U'ksheratza Hashem Yisbarach l'hakos b'chorei Mitzrayim, chidesh eze inyan mafsid u'misyaches le'b'choros. So therefore, when God wanted to destroy the Egyptians, he didn't just cause the Egyptian firstborns to be zapped, but rather there was some sort of disease or natural condition that God sent which affected Bechoros. Ki ha-Bechoros yesh yachas b'nehem kolel u'mishatef osam. There must be some sort of biological common denominator that firstborns share. V'hu she'en safik she'en arechem asher lo nolad bo ubar me'olam vlados, because the womb is different during the first pregnancy than it is during subsequent pregnancies, and that difference will have some effect on the fetus, which will cause there to be some type of biological difference between firstborn children and other children. Now, our issue now is not to consider the scientific veracity of this claim, nor is it really to focus on this pshat. You can question many aspects of his pshat, but it's really to see how he deals with the following question, which is, his answer is as follows. He's now explained to us why it is that the Bechorei Yisrael must have gratitude. Because since the Bechorei Mitzrayim were punished by some type of disease that affects Bechorim, so therefore, naturally, the Jews should have been punished as well. And therefore, miraculously, the Jewish people were saved, and for this they must have gratitude. They were, as it were, acquired by HaKadosh Baruch Hu when he killed the Bechorei Mitzrayim and didn't kill them. He saved their life, and that explains why there's a mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen. He says this also explains why Pidyon HaBen only relates to Bechor Min Ha'em, Peter Rechem, not Bechor Min Ha'av. In other aspects of Halacha, like Yerusha, we look at Bechor Min Ha'av. Well, why here do we look at Bechor Min Ha'em? And the answer, he says, is very simple. According to his thesis, the disease that affected Bechorim only affected Bechoros Min Ha'em. Why? Because there is nothing biologically unique to a Bechor Min Ha'av, and therefore there's no expectation that they would have been killed, and therefore they don't owe their lives to God, at least in this sense, so they were not niskadshu, and therefore there's no mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen. So he has now offered quite a brilliant thesis to explain A, why Bechorei Yisrael have to have gratitude to God, and B, why the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen is limited to Bechor Min Ha'em. The question, though, he has to deal with is the Medrash. We all know the Medrash that states that it wasn't just Bechor Min Ha'em, but it was Bechor Min Ha'av as well. Not just Bechor Min Ha'av, but it was Ein Bais Asher Ein Sham Meis, that if there was no Bechor in the house, the oldest child would be killed. Well, his explanation contradicts the Medrash. So he writes, where it's underlined, V'af al pisha amru b'medrash ein bayis asher ein sham meis ein sham b'chor gadol habayis karui b'chor zehu altzad hadrash. This medrash is altzad hadrash. Aval kafi pshuto shel davar ha-b'choro shahayu nitlim b'pitrei ha-rechamim heim shalaku. But according to the pshat, who was actually killed? The peter rechems, the b'chor min ha'em. V'hayab b'nehem yachas v'kesher Asher mitzad hayachas ahu hayarawui shiyoku gam b'chor Yisrael im menichem Hashem letivam. U'mepnei zeh amar Hashem yisparach shem mepnei shehegen ba'adam v'tzilam min hara shahayarawui lachul aleihem kidei shosam lo. So it sounds like what the Ran is saying is that what actually happened was the Bechor Min Ha'em were the only firstborns that were killed, not Bechor Min Ha'av, not the oldest one in the house. And that explains other psukim in the Torah. What about the Medrash? The Medrash is Altsad Hadrash. But it doesn't sound like he's saying that's what actually happened. What actually happened, meaning to say what corresponded to physical reality, was that the Bechor Min Ha'em died, and the story as depicted by the Medrash is telling me something else. Other Mefarshim seem to make a similar assumption. If we turn, for example, back to the Ibn Ezra on the pasuk we mentioned earlier as to how many people went down to Egypt. So the Ibn Ezra quotes the Medrash. This is actually at the end of your source books. I'm sorry, it's out of order. And he quotes the Medrash that this is referring to Yocheved. And he writes that this is impossible because that would make Yocheved 130 years old when Moshe was born. We know the Jews were in Egypt for 210 years. That too is based off of Chazal. But they were in Egypt for 210 years. And Moshe was 80 when they left. So that would make Yocheved 130 years old when she bore Moshe. And he says that if such an incredible miracle took place, so the Torah surely would have mentioned it. We know that when Sarah gave birth at 90 years old, the Torah makes such a big deal out of it. And here Yocheved gave birth at 130 and there's no mention in the Torah. And therefore, he rejects the Midrashic interpretation. he answers the question that the 70 includes not includes Yaakov. You only get 69 when you count up those who came with him, and the total number of 70 includes Yaakov. So here too, sounds like the Ibn Ezra is saying is how many. The Medrash says Yocheved was born Bein HaChomos. Is that what actually happened? No. And notice, like the Ran, he rejects the Medrash largely based off of textual issues, meaning to say the Psukim, he doesn't say that it's impossible for someone to give birth at 130 years old, but his point is that the Torah should have said so if that's what happened. Now the Ramban over here disagrees, and it's important to consider the reasons for his disagreement. The Ramban doesn't categorically state that everything in the Medrash is literally true, but rather he writes that when it comes to Nisim Nistarim, the Torah does not always tell us what exactly happened. V'omer ani ki al kolponim yad b'davar yocheved pelagado min anisim anistarim shem yisod ha-Torah. Now, another time we should discuss what exactly a Nes Nistar is according to the Ramban. We oftentimes translate as Nes Nistar as something that's a hidden miracle or something that doesn't violate the laws of nature. Giving birth at 130 is quite remarkable from our perspective. And for now, we won't elaborate on that point. But there's no doubt that a Nes Nistar is something that's not overt in the same fashion. There's plausible deniability to some degree, but it really is a nes, it really is hashgacha. It's the yesod of kol haTorah, according to the Ramban, the notion of nisim nistarim, the notion of hashgacha. And he writes that the Torah doesn't always mention, or frequently does not mention nisim nistarim. So why is it that Sarah was a nes nigla? First of all, Sarah never had any children beforehand, Yocheved had. And moreover, in the case of Sarah, the event was predicted by a prophet, whereas in the case of Yocheved it was not. And therefore, it falls under the category of a Nes Nistar, and frequently Nisim Nistarim are not mentioned in the Torah. So the Ramban tells us that he rejects the premise of the Ibn Ezra, that if something significant happened, it should have been mentioned in the Torah. Rather, he asserts that there are many important details of the stories that are not mentioned in the Torah Shebichtav. That doesn't mean that they didn't happen, and especially with respect to Nisim Nistarim. And we'll return again to a fuller understanding of what Ramban's Shita is in a moment, but let's first consider one other Makor. This is a Makor like the Ibn Ezra and the Ran, who understands that we shouldn't assume that what physically happened corresponds to the Medrash, rather, it corresponds to the Pshat. And this is in Abar Benel, in the Haggadah. This is again a Makor from Yehuda Frank. The Abar Benel writes that the Pasuk says that Yehoshua, the Jewish people, buried the Atzmos Yosef in the city of Shechem. And he writes, Aval Shar Shvatim Nikberu B'Mitzrayim. The other 11 brothers were buried in Egypt. Vim HaYosha Chazal Darshu Al v'ha'aleisem es atzmosai mizei tchem sha'af shar shvatim helu imahem al derech drash. We all know the Medrash that states that all 12 brothers were brought from Mitzrayim and buried in Israel. That is al derech drash. Apparently the Abar Benel did not visit Kever Dan ben Yosef. And he says that al pipshat, all the other brothers were buried in Egypt. Upshat hakasuv lo yisbilaso shamar veikach Moshe's atzmos Yosef imo ki yashbeya hishbiya v'im hayu ma'alim atzmos shar shvatim lo yishto kakra mizulaso. So the Abar Benel here assumes, much like his teacher the Ran, that the literal facts correspond more to the pshat. He, like the Ibn Ezra, assumes that important things have to be mentioned, and if they're not mentioned, we could presume that they didn't happen. Again, you could very much dingzach on his diukim, even on the level of pshat. For example, it might have stated, stressed Yosef because there was a haftachash, be'ayish biyah, and the like. Nevertheless, that's his conclusion. So we see here a number of the Mefarshim do seem to assume that, again, the physical reality it corresponds to the pshat. Yes?
What would they do with the Gemara Sozah? I think it's also put a brachos of Shema Hashem Kol Yehuda and all Ebrei L'Shefa, that like that call on all 40 years in the desert, that the bones of Yehuda were rattling around.
Right, I think you would say that's al tzad hadrash and not al tzad hapshat. He acknowledges that what he's saying is against the Medrash. Yes? Right, because they were the ones that followed Kal Yisrael, that didn't sin with the Chet HaEgel, so therefore they didn't need to be replaced.
Meaning they were also saved from Achzibor?
No, there was the only people that were saved were the Bechorim, and therefore they owed a certain level of gratitude. Then when they didn't step up to the plate at Egel HaZahav, so then they were replaced, and that's the reason for the Pidyon HaBem. Okay. So the first question we have to deal with is, what is the point in Medrash? Once we say that it doesn't correspond to physical reality, so what's the point? Why is it telling this to me? And here we have to say a very important yesod. Let's take an example, since we're supposed to be doing Chazar today as well, that we brought up a couple of weeks ago. The Gemara Bava Basra Tezayin Mabei says that Chamesh Averos Avar Oso Arasha B'Yom Hahu. Esav violated five major sins on the day in which he sold the Bechorah to Yaakov. Baal Nairah Murasa V'Harages HaNefesh V'Kafer B'Tchis HaMesim V'Kafer B'Iker V'Shates HaBechorah. So I believe the Maritz Chiyos in his Hakdama to Talmud writes that this medrash should be seen somewhat as an exaggeration. We don't have to say literally he did all five of Averus on the same day. And then again, here we have this question. So why does the medrash tell us this? So I think the Maritz Chiyos implies it's sort of an exaggeration of sort to show us how bad Esav is. But I think that the MS is that we have to look for the amkus of Medrash. Whether or not it literally happened, and as we'll try to show shortly, to a large degree whether it literally happened or not is irrelevant. The Medrash is trying to teach us the amkus, the pnimius haTorah. The pshat is the levush, and the Medrash is the amkus. In this case, for example, B'Shaito, we said a pshat, how all five of these averos, this is something I heard from Ravan Lapiansky, my rabbi, that all five averos relate to Esav's perspective of focusing on here and now versus Yaakov's perspective, which considered the future. We showed, for example, how Nairah Murasa is an example of this. Nairah Murasa, Erosin is a concept that didn't even exist at that time yet. But the concept of Erosin is the yesod that somebody's future state already has an effect now. Meaning to say, because she's going to move into Beis Baila in a year from now, already now, even though she's still Beveis Avia, she has the status of an Ashes Ish. And it's Shayach to have Znus. So, the Medrash, the Gemara is trying to teach us an important Yesod about the Iker Nikudas HaMachlokas between Yaakov and Esav. It was two different perspectives upon how to view the world. Esav was here and now. Hine anochi holech lamus v'lama zeliya b'chora. And thus, it's a denial of the concept of Erosin, that somebody's status is different now based off of some future event. And so on and so forth. And we can't always figure out the amkos of Medrash. After all, it's Omek. Samok. We talked earlier in the year, again here we'll be Yotzei Chazar a little bit, that the Rambam's position that when you encounter a problematic medrash, if you understand it, good, and if not, you should assume that there's something deeper being conveyed here that you don't yet understand. But that is what medrash is meant to do, what drash is meant to do. It's meant to tell you the pnimius haTorah, that the pshat is more of the levush, And the Medrash, as well as other deeper levels of Torah, including Sod and the like, or the Pnimius Adavar. A number of weeks ago, the Shabbos before Pesach, Rav Aaron Lapiansky was here actually for Shabbos, and someone asked him at the question-answer session that he met a young child, and it was Parshas, I guess, Tazria, and asked what the Parsha was about, and the child said, Lashon Hara. So the person asking this question was very troubled. What do you mean? The Parsha doesn't say anything about Lashon Hara. It talks all about Tzaras. And he said, well, that's a fair critique, and it is important to actually know what the Psukim say at the right age. I don't know if a four-year-old is ready to start declaring in the Gayim. But if someone were to only learn the Pshat, they went to elementary school or nursery school, and they would learn all about the different colors and Baharas and Negayim and the like, but they would miss the concept that Tzaras and Negayim relate to Lashon Hara and the way we talk about people. So they would have largely missed the point. Just as someone who learns the Parsha of Tazria without mentioning Tzaras has missed the point, so too, if you learn Parshas Tazria without mentioning Lashon Hara, you've missed a point. And it's only when you have both that you have the true understanding of the Torah. Now, Torah is infinitely deep and infinitely true, and of course we can never fully understand the Torah. These are different layers and different levels, but the perspective of Chazal was that the Pshat is true, Ein Mikra Yotze Mide Pshuto, but it oftentimes doesn't reveal the truer and deeper message of the Torah, and therefore someone who studies only Pshat without Drash is missing a major point. And that's why when you look at many of the Pashtunim, they acknowledge that what they're doing isn't necessarily the Ikar Mahalich. The Rashbam, very famously in Parshas Vayeshev, Perek Lamed Zayin, makes this point. This is sort of his preamble to his interpretation, his commentary. You have it here. Yaskilu v'yavinu o'avei secha al mashalim dunu rabosenu ki ein mikra yotze midei pshuto. So Chazal already told us Ein Mikra Yotze Midei Pshuto. We know that's what Rashbam does in his commentary. He focuses on Pshat, he explains the Psukim based off of the Psukim alone, and oftentimes his interpretations contradict Chazal. But he tells us at the same time that what I'm doing isn't the Ikar. Af ki ikara shel Torah basa lelamdenu uloho di'anu birimizos hapshat ha-hagados v'ha-halachos v'adinim al yidei arichos ha-lashon v'al yidei shlosh m'shtayim midos shel Rabbi Elazar b'no shel Rabbi Yossi Aglili v'al yidei shalosh esrei midos shel Rabbi Ishmael, that the Ikar shel Torah is to teach us both the halacha and the haggadah through textual nuances. As you all know, for the most part, midrashim are based of textual idiosyncrasies, points that very often are not important on a level of pshat, which looks at and focuses upon context as opposed to focusing on these idiosyncrasies. He says that the Ikar shel Torah is the drash, both in terms of halacha as well as haggados, he writes. And that's why he writes that it is the case that among the Rishonim, what he calls the Rishonim, there was not a focus upon pshat. V'arishonim mitoch asidusam nis'asku lintos acharei hadrasho shehen ikar. U'mitoch kach lo hurgalu b'omek pshuto shel mikra. Now, again, omek pshuto shel mikra. We're not saying that pshat isn't amok. And the idea of the Rashbam, as well as the other pashtanim, is to show the omek pshat. But nevertheless, he writes it's not the ikar. He quotes the Gemara Brachos that says that min ubinechem min haigayon, that's interpreted differently by different commentaries. Some understand it's a reference to logic, but the mefarshim, the rishonim, generally understand higayon is actually referring to pshat, pshuto shel mikra. So why is it that you shouldn't teach your kids higayon, the Rashbam says, because it's not the Iker. The Rashbam reiterates this point in a number of other places. You have them here. So that's the first point to consider. Yes?
Where do Remez and Sod fit in?
We'll get there a little bit. Bezras Hashem. A little bit. But the answer is that, broadly speaking, they exist on the same continuum in terms of bringing out the neshama of the Torah. Now, the next point is that when we go ahead and we explain psukim based off of these deeper explanations, that doesn't simply give us a license to discount the pshat. For example, the Ramban, in his commentary on the first Prakim of Bereishis, alludes to many of the secrets, the sod understandings of the Torah and Gan Eden and the like. But he says that Ein Mikra Yotzei Midei Pshuto, and this does not give us the license to say that the simple understanding of the psukim isn't also true, whether it is with respect to what things were created on which day, or that Gan Eden is an actual physical existence, a physical place on this world. Even after Ramban tells us the various sodos, again we're Mekayim Chazara now, of Gan Eden, he nevertheless says, but of course it's also true, that Gan Eden actually exists. So far what we've been saying is that Pshat and Drash are meant to convey multiple layers, and that each perspective alone is incomplete, and it's together that you arrive at a more complete understanding of the Torah's message and a better ability to understand Ratzon Hashem. Moreover, we've seen that according to some commentaries, like Abarbanel and Ran, in cases of incompatibility with respect to the narrative sections, we will assume that what actually physically happened corresponds to the pshat. And the question is, what would others say? Now again, as the Ramban tells us, most of the time there's not necessarily a contradiction between the pshat and the drash. We know things from the Medrash that we wouldn't know based off of pshat, but they're not necessarily contradicting each other. But again, what do we do in cases where they do contradict? So let's consider, since understanding the Ramban's perspective on this idea is needless to say extremely important, let us consider a couple of Rambans. The first Ramban is a fascinating Ramban which discusses the place of Avram's birth. Was he born in Haran? Was he born in Ur Kasdim? Also, it discusses Avram's early history. As we noted, Avram's early history, including the story of Ur Kasdim, his being saved from the oven of Nimrod and the like, are not discussed in the Psukim at all. And how are we to deal with that? So the Ramban writes, Va'inyan shekiblu rabosenu b'zehu emes. The view of Chazal in terms of Avram's early history is true. Vanim v'eroso, Avram Avinu lo nolad bor kasdim. We're not going to get into the details here. He argues that Avram's family originally stemmed from Haran, not the way Rashi understands it, and that they emigrated to Ur Kasdim before coming to Eretz Yisrael. V'ainyan ha'mekubal hazeh nimtza gam kein b'sefer kadmoni hagayim. Fascinating. This concept that we know from Chazal that Avram Avinu was persecuted due to his preaching of monotheism is actually found in non-Jewish sources as well. Kemo shekasav harav mar nevuchim ki hizkir b'sefer avodas ha'acharim ha'mitzriim. It's referred to in the book quoted called Avodas Hacharim Hamitzrim. What book is that? It's known as the Nabataean Agriculture, Kitab al Falaha al Nabatia, which was composed in the year approximately 904 by Abu Bakr Ahmed ibn Ali ibn Qais al-Washia, who was a 10th century, thank you, Wikipedia, 10th century Iraqi alchemist, agriculturalist, and historian. And he wrote this book, which includes agricultural advice as well as superstitions and the like, based off of ancient Babylonian sources. That's why it's called the Nabataean agricultural book, because it was Nabataean, meaning to say was based off of the ancient Babylonian sources. So the Ramban writes that this story of Avram Avinu actually appears not just in the Medrash, but in Sefer Kadmonei Hagayim. Ki Avram asher nolad bekusa chalak al das hamon. How does it appear in the Nabataean agricultural work? It says that Avram was born in Kuta. I assume Kuta and Kazdim are similar. And he disagreed with, maybe Haran. I don't know, he doesn't make that point. Anyway, Avram was born in Kuta, and Chalak al das hamon shehayu ovdim hashemesh. He debated the majority position of the people of the time who served the sun. V'nasan ha-melech oso b'veis ha-sar v'ayimahem b'tochachos yamim rabim sham. So the king threw him in jail because of his monotheistic beliefs, and he continued to argue in favor of monotheism. Achar kach pachad ha-melech she-yashchis alav artso v'yasir b'nei adam be'emunasam. At a certain point, the king was concerned that Avram Avinu was going to corrupt the people and cause them to stray from their idolatrous beliefs. The Giresh Oso El Ktse Eretz Kinan Asher Achar Shalakach Kol Hono. Like all good Jewish persecutors, he took all his money and expelled him. And that's how expelled him to the land of Canaan. So the Ramban now notes an obvious point, which is that there's certainly overlap between the Midrashic version and the Nabataean version, but nevertheless, they're not quite identical. For example, in the Nabataean version, no mention is made of the miracle that he was thrown into a burning furnace and emerged alive. But he writes, V'hine al kol panim, b'makomahu be'eretz gazdim nasen es lavam avinu. Either way, whether you follow the Midrashic version or the Nabataean version, a miracle happened. O Nes Nister, either it was a hidden miracle, as described by the Nabataean version. What's the miracle? Shenasan belev oso amelech latzilo velo yamisenu v'hosi oso mibeis asor shel yelech lenafsho. That the king didn't kill him, but simply expelled him. We know that when it comes to dictators, they don't generally simply expel people that are undermining their authority. They kill them. And yet, this king expelled Avram and let him live. And that's a miracle. So either it was a miracle that was a Nes Nister, according to the Nabataean version, or Nes Mifursam Sheshlichu L'Kivshana Eish V'Nitzal K'Divrei Rabboseinu. Now, the Ramban's presentation is such that he presents both opinions concerning this famous episode, and he appears to treat both of them equally. He writes, either it was a hidden miracle or it was a overt miracle. And later on in his commentary in the Chumash, he also refers to both possible versions. In other words, he's not machria. He writes, well, if what actually happened was what Chazal depicted, why then doesn't it mention it in the Nabataean version? He says, it's not Akasha, that's the next version. V'ayufateo scha Rebbe Avram b'kush yosav she'omer shelo siper hakasav zapela. Ibn Ezra over here as well, just like in the story of Yocheved, asks the same question. If this actually happened, why isn't it in the Pasuk? The Ramban Lishitaso says, that's not a good question. And he gives the same answer, because the Torah doesn't always tell us Nisim Nistarim. Ki od etein l'chatam v'raya bezeu ki yotzei bo. Aval agayim, haim lois. Okay, good. So he's saying that it's an ace nister. Now remember, it's only an ace nister if you follow the Nabataean version. But he says, in terms of the Ibn Ezra's kasha of why does the psukim not mention it, it's not a kasha. Just like I told you over there, in the case of Yocheved, the Torah doesn't always mention ace nister. So to hear. And then, why don't the Goyim mention the miracle? According to the Midrashic version, he writes, "Aval Goyim Ahem lo yizkiru zeh b'sifram lefi shem cholken al da'ato vayuchoshvin beniso shumasek shafim." The Goyim didn't have an interest in playing up the miracle. After all, the notion of a miracle contradicted their belief, and they attributed the miracle to magic. Kinyan Moshe Rabbeinu im ha-mitzrim b'tchilas ma'asav. Why didn't the Torah Shebechtav mention this miracle? Because then it would have to mention the debate between Avram and the idolaters. Kasher Hizkir Divrei Chartumim Mitzrayim, just like it mentioned the position of the Chartumim, that it was magic. Velo Nizbaru Divrei Avram Imahem, Kasher Nizbaru Divrei Moshe Rabbeinu Vasof, and therefore the Torah leaves it out. But so that's one Ramban. Let's look at another Ramban. Yeah.
Would the Ramban deal with the idea that if the Nimrod was expelling him, then what would kind of love on the arts about it? Speaking that anyway.
That's anyway a point that you have in the Psukim. It's a good question, and you have to deal with it in the Psukim anyway, because it also talks about how Terach already planned to leave wherever he was to go to the land of Canaan, and how does that relate to the tzivui at the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha? So it's a good question. It's one that the Ramban does deal with, and it's important to but not our issue, which is how did the end of Parshas Noach relate to the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha? Another point you see in the Ramban frequently is that he asks very practical questions on Midrashim and assesses them accordingly. Sometimes, and this is a very important methodological point, which is, should we ask these types of questions on Midrashim? And sometimes he answers the questions. Other times, it causes him to offer an alternative explanation, at least on a level of pshat. Meaning to say that these questions might not be questions on the Medrash on a level of Drash, but if we are to say that the Medrash is Pshat, then these are legitimate questions. And on other occasions, he does both. So just to take one example, though, again, we could bring many. This is a Ramban from Parshas Toldos, Hakol Kol Yaakov, when Yaakov is disguising himself as Esav and he appears before Yitzchak. Yitzchak notes that his voice is the voice of Yaakov. And Rashi writes, Amar belibo ein derech Esav lios shem shamayim shagor befiv. How is it that Yitzchak was suspicious that this was Yaakov? Because Yaakov frequently used the name of God, and this was not something that Esav did. V'chein b'bereishis rabba. And Ramban notes, Rashi isn't making this up, this is a mefurash medrash. Vani tamea, ki lo haya Esav Rasha be'enei Aviv. We know that Yitzchak did not think Esav was a Rasha. V'ulai haya choshev belibo. So that's his question. His question is, one second, if Yaakov had Shem Shemayim Shagor Befiv, and Esav didn't, so wouldn't Yitzchak have realized that Esav was a Rasha and Yaakov was a Tzaddik? V'ulai ha'yachoshev b'libo ki bavur yoso ish sadeh v'libo al hatzayid einenu mazkir shem shamay mipachto shelo yazkirenu b'makom sheno tohor u'mibli kavana v'nechshev lo zeh b'enei aviv lira shamayim. No, he gives a yishuv for Rashi. He says, well, maybe the pshat in the medrash is that Yitzchak didn't see the lack of shem shamayim b'fiv shel Esav as a raya that he was a rasha. Why? Because maybe he didn't mention Shem Shamayim because he was frequently in dirty, disgusting places, and it would have been inappropriate to mention Shem Shamayim, and therefore perhaps Esav's lack of mentioning Shem Shamayim was a reflection of Yerushamayim, and therefore he's Mekayim the Medrash. But he writes, nevertheless, al derech hapshat yiyazeh ba'avur tviyas hakol. The simple understanding is that it has nothing to do with Shem Shemayim. It's much simpler. Yaakov and Esav's voices were distinct. They weren't identical. Yaakov's voice was different. Yitzchak recognized Esav's voice. He recognized Yaakov's voice, and therefore he said, "Hakol kol Yaakov." So how do we deal with these midrashim? I mean, these types of Rambans. Sounds like what the Ramban is saying is that when understanding pshat, we have to look at pshat. And on the level of pshat, the reason why Yitzchak said HaKol Kol Yaakov is because it was the voice of Yaakov. It wasn't because of Shem Shemayim. Now, in this case, pshat and drash don't necessarily have to contradict each other, and could be aspects of both. So we have to look then at places where they seem to contradict more. And I'd like to consider an example from Parshas Kedoshim. And the impression that I get in the Ramban concerning the question that we raised at the beginning, what really happened? Was it the pshat or was it the drash? Is that the Ramban feels that it doesn't really matter. The Pasuk says in Kedoshim, Perek Yotes, Pasuk Chafav, Lo Sochlo Al Adam. So the Ramban begins by noting that the Gemara in Sanhedrin has numerous explanations as to what this means. V'ha'olam isham lefi asugya shem kula min ha'Torah shekalal ha'kasuv kol achila zadam v'lav achad v'imkein ma she'amar ha'kasuv hinei ha'am chotim la'shem lechol al hadam. So in terms of halacha, we know that we follow the Medrash, we follow the Gemara. So in terms of the halachic understanding of the pasuk lo sochul al hadam, so it's what the Gemara in Sanhedrin says. So that's a halachic point. But the Ramban notes that the interpretation of this pasuk also relates to a narrative, to a story. What story? The story from Parsha, from Sefer Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yudalad, which describes the battle that the Jewish people had against the Plishtim, how they chased them throughout the day, how at the end of the day they were famished, because Shaul had said nobody can eat anything during the day. And it says in the pasuk, "Vayagidu leShaul emor, hine ha'am chotim laHashem lechol al hadam." So what were they doing? So according to the Medrash, according to the Gemara, what they were doing, the Ramban says is, "V'imkein ma she'amar ha'kasuv b'Shaul hine ha'am chotim laHashem lechol al hadam." It must be that they violated one of the prohibitions that the Gemara in Sanhedrin uses to explain this pasuk. What one would that be? What makes the most sense? He says, and he writes this could be supported by other psukim in that story. So essentially, they were eating before the animal had fully died. That was their violation. That's Alpi HaGemara. And then he continues, skipping a little, V'alderech HaPshat, Hu min mimine HaKishuf O HaKsomim Ki Hu Davar Lameid Me'inyano. What does Lo Socho Adam mean Alpi Pshat? So first of all, note that even though this is a halachic section, the Ramban feels the need to explain the psukim, both based off of Pshat and Drash. So al pi drash, the pasuk means don't eat from the animal while it's still alive. But pshat is much more focused on context, and the context of the pasuk relates to things like kishuf and kosem and magic and necromancy, and therefore he thinks on a level of pshat, this mitzvah relates to some form of necromancy. Vayushovchen hadam u'me'asven osam beguma v'ashedim iskabtim sham kefi da'atam v'ochlim al shulchanam lagid lahem asidos. The Ovdei Avodah Zarah think that if you shecht an animal and you have a pool of blood, then the demons gather and somehow tell you the future, and that's what the pasuk is coming to prohibit. V'kasher hayu Yisrael im Shaul b'machaneh ahu hayu mispachadim me'od min ha'plishtim So what happened there was that the Jewish people were very anxious about the battle with the Plishtim. After all, the Plishtim had vastly outnumbered them, and they wanted to know what was going to happen, and Shaul was only willing to consult the Urim V'Tumim, and there wasn't even time for that, and they were nervous, and the like. And therefore, their sin was to engage in this type of fortune-telling, using blood and demons and the like. And that was their sin. And he then brings textual support from Sefer Shmuel to support that as well. The impression you get is that the Ramban didn't really think it was important to figure out what actually happened. What's important is to understand the Psukim al-Pi Pshat and to understand the Psukim al-Pi Drash. That's true both with respect to narrative sections and with respect to halachic sections. And therefore he does both. And he explains both. And he answers questions on both. And he gives answers to both. What actually happened? Did they eat animals before they had died? Did they do this necromancy? He doesn't tell us. Maybe the pshat, maybe the drash, maybe both. It's not a question that bothers him, and therefore he feels no need to answer. Agav, you see here that the pshat and the drash are related, which is almost always the case. They both relate in the story of Shmuel to being impatient and rushing and going quicker than you should. But that's a different story. So I'd like to try to develop this idea a little bit of who cares. Again, we noted that the Ramban doesn't seem to care, or it's not his interest, to figure out what actually happened. We live in a world where we often do want to know, well, what happened? Lemaisa, what happened? Last week we referred to the Rambam in the Hakdama to Perek HaChelek, where he writes that studying history for its own sake, just to know about what happened in the past, is not a particularly valuable pursuit. The Mishnah says, Kol Yisrael yesh lam chelek l'olam haba, elu she'en lam chelek l'olam haba, and one of them is Rabbi Kiva Omer, afak kori b'sfarim chitzonim. And the Gemara there discusses what exactly is sfarim chitzonim. One view is that it's Ben Sira and the like, and the Ramban writes, amru shem sifrei minim. So some say it's sifrei minim, and he writes about Ben Sira, vuaya ish shechiber sfarim yesh bahem hatulim me inyanei hakaras panim ein bahem tam velo toeles. It's not a book which conveys much wisdom. Ela ibud hazman behethel, just a waste of time. Kigon ela sfarim anim tzaim etzel haarav misipur divrei yamim. And therefore the Mishnah is telling us that you shouldn't waste your time reading books that don't impart important information. And an example of a book that wastes time are history books, books comprised by the Arabs, Mesipur Divrei Yamim, V'Hanagas HaMelachim, V'Yichusei HaAraviyim, V'Sifrei HaNigun, Ukiyote Behen Min HaSfarim, She'en Behen Chachma V'Lo Toeles, Gufani el ibud hazman bilvad. Reading about Divrei Hayamim, at least in its own right, meaning to say just to find out what happened, not to learn a lesson, is a waste of time. And is pointless. This notion to some degree is actually reflected in the halacha with respect to Kriya Shtari Hadyotos on Shabbos and Tosa's position concerning Divrei Malachim and the like. And the idea is expressed, I think, in the following source. The Gemara in Yoma, Hayamud Beis, asks, Ketzad Hilbishan. Ketzad Hilbishan. Mai Dehave Have. Ela Ketzad Malbishin Malbishan La'asid Lavo. So how was it that Moshe Rabbeinu dressed Aaron and his sons? So the Gemara says, who cares? My dehave have. Whatever happened, happened. In other words, just knowing about what happened in the past, even with respect to an event that's as important as Hakamas HaMishkan, is not important. My dehave have, what happened, happened. So the Gemara says, all right, well, actually, a different question. How are we going to be malbish to Kohen Gadol Asad Lavo? And even that, the Gemara says, we don't need to answer that question. Lekshiyavo Aaron Umoshe Uvanav, sorry, Lekshiyavo Aaron Uvanav Umoshe Imahen, we'll ask them. This relates to a topic we also discussed a while back of Hilchas LeMashicha. Ella, the Gemara says, no. Ketzad Hilbishan LeMizbar Krai. Oh, we have to know how to teach the psukim. And we give an answer. Pligi bar Rabbi Chia of Rabbi Yochanan, Chad Amar Aaron Vachar Kachpanav, Vachad Amar Aaron Uvanav Bivasachas. So we're not inherently interested in what happened in the past. Mai dehave have. We're interested in understanding the Torah and gleaning its message. And we do that when we understand the Torah, both al pi pshat and al pi drash. And therefore it's important for us to understand what happened al pi pshat and what happened al pi drash. And what is the Medrash coming to teach us, and what is the Omek HaPshat, and what is the Omek HaDrash, and the like. And that's why, perhaps, the Ramban is not so interested in what physically corresponded to the technical, historically. This might actually be a debate between Rashi and the Rosh and Chulin. It says in Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, by Rabbi Yirmi, Advari Basar Nechira Shechnisu Yisrael Iman La'aretz Mahu. We know that Basar Nechira was to some degree permitted in the Midbar, according to one opinion. Well, what happens if they brought it into Eretz Yisrael? It was Mutter in the Midbar. Does it remain Mutter, or does it become Usser? Rashi asks the question, who cares? Never going to happen again. And he answers, Drosh V'Kabel Schar. And the Rosh invokes the Gemara that we just said, which is, we don't say Drosh V'Kabel Schar. We say, Mai Dehave Have. And therefore, that can't be the pshat in the Gemara. If you take a look, the Rosh, v'lo nehira, d'dafka l'mizbar kroy darshinan, afal pi shekvar avar, afal l'kvo abaya b'shas b'davar she'en bo tzorech, lo ashkechan. That's why the Gemara always asks, l'may nafkamina. And he quotes this Gemara. Now, that doesn't mean to say that knowing our history isn't important. Look at the Ramban on Zechor Yemos Olam, Binu Shnos Dor Vador. But what it means is that we're meant to understand the lessons of history, to see the Hashkacha in history, to become better people, to understand the Torah Pi Pshat, to understand the Torah Pi Drash. And in terms of events that don't necessarily relate to that, including what actually happened, what was the Avera B'yamei Shaul? Was it eating from the Behema while it was still alive, or was it necromancy? Mai dehave have. There's a very interesting book, I'm not necessarily recommending that you read it, entitled Zachor, Jewish History and Jewish Memory, by Yosef Chaim Yerushalmi, who was the chair of Jewish history at Columbia after Sal Baron. And the thesis of his book is actually this point, to some degree. He writes that, tries to explain why Judaism is very interested in memory, but not in history. He's bothered by the fact that, the way he puts it is, in the post-biblical era, there's very little interest in history. And to a large degree, he's right. To try to figure out history from Gemara, from Midrashim, is nearly impossible. We have little bits and pieces here and there. We could try to cobble together to come up with some sort of history, but it's difficult. Many of the stories, for example, take place in various eras. You'll have the same story take place in one medrash during the Hasmonean period, and another period, and another medrash in the Roman period, and the details change. And there's very little history. And why is it that there's no history? And not only that, but he notes even in the medieval period, the lack of Jewish history is notorious. And he says there you can't just say, well, it wasn't in the Gemara, so the Rishonim didn't do it as well, because, as he notes, the medieval Jewry blazed new paths in philosophy, science, linguistic, secular, and metrical Hebrew poetry, none of which had precedence in Talmudic history. Only in historiography, a field in which Islamic civilization excelled and forged an important tradition. Remember, we saw the Rambam making fun of the stupid Arabs for focusing on history. Did a similar interaction fail to take place? And the Yerushalmi deals with a handful of exceptions, like Yossi Pun and Seder Olam and Sefer Kabbalah. He shows that they're not a Pirchanis pshat. So what's the pshat? So basically, he gives the answer that we were saying, that the position of Chazal and Rishonim with respect to history was mai dehave have. And it's only those, especially beginning in the early modern period and really taking off in the Wissenschaft, that were basically Jews that were Gaiish, or Jews that were trying to respond to the Gaiim, or the Gaiish Jews, that history became important. But for traditional Jews, it was never something important. He writes, the modern effort to reconstruct the past begins at a time that witnesses a sharp break in the continuity of Jewish living, and hence also an ever-growing decay of Jewish group memory. In this sense, if for no other, history becomes what it had never been before, the faith of fallen Jews. And he writes autobiographically, that's true about him. He was not a firm person at all. And that's why he's interested in history. Jews traditionally were interested in memory, not in history. Look at the Haggadah and how we retell the story. Now again, that's not to say that it's not important, and it's not true. But it's a very different perspective. It's the perspective of mai dehave have. And that might explain why, again, the Ramban in so many places, when telling us about a narrative, says, okay, this is what happened al pipshat, and this is what happened al pidrash, and isn't bothered by what actually happened. A, because like we said, they're both true. And B, because what actually happened isn't important. What's important is to understand the Torah and to understand Ratzon Hashem. A couple of other haros on Ramban's dealing with pshat. Yeah?
When approaching history, so how does one know which history book is going to be relevant to the message that we have to take out of it?
That's a very good question, and I would agree that in the modern world it may be important to know history in a way that perhaps was not important during the times of the Rishonim or the like. Because we live in a world that is very concerned about history, and it is very important for us to know about the past, Zechor Yemos Olam, we do have to study history, and then the question of historiography and how best to study history is very important. And for a Jew living in the modern world, that's the name of the book, right? The study of history might take on new important tashkafic dimensions in a way that it didn't in the past. How to do it halacha lemaisa differs very greatly based off of a person and their predilections and their background and the like. And it's a dangerous issue because a lot of the good historical works are also very much subtly infused with very problematic hashkafos, but at the same time they're oftentimes much better than the firmer works, and how to practically deal with it is a very interesting question, which is not for today's discussion, but it is important to consider. So first of all, you mentioned the idea of sod, and the Ramban's, where does sod fit into this? So the Ramban, as you know, very frequently does discuss sod. Interestingly, the Ramban very frequently writes how sod very much corresponds to the simple literal reading of the text in a way that even pshat doesn't. Another point that the Ramban understands is that with respect to the question of whether Midrashim should be taken literally or not, the Ramban often understands that Midrashim are conveying Kabbalistic concepts. For example, if you take a look here, the Ramban in Parshas Yisro writes on the Pasuk, Bimshol Chayovel Hema Ya'alu Bahar. So Rashi quotes the Medrash that this is Shofar Elo Shel Yitzchak. And the Ramban says that there are problems with this because Elo Shel Yitzchak was an Ola, and therefore the horn should have been burnt. And he says in answer, perhaps for Rashi, that they were reconstituted. But he writes, Lefidati Hagada Hazu Yesh La Sod. And he tells you what the sod of the Agada is. Amru Shezeh HaKol Hu Pachad Yitzchak. Vilachach Amar Vayacharad Kol Ha Masher B'machana and the like. So, what's the Medrash telling you? The Medrash isn't telling you that the horn of Yitzchak was literally blown, as Rashi said. The Medrash is telling you that there was a coal of Pachad Yitzchak that enveloped the Jews at Har Sinai. Another very important yesod that comes out from the Ramban, and we're very late, so I'm going to be makatzer, but it's very kedai to read this Ramban carefully. This is from Parshas Tzav, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Tes. The psukim over there are discussing who eats the menachos of Klal Yisrael, and which Kohanim that is. And the Pasuk sounds like the Ramban writes on a level of pshat that when it comes to a minchas soles, so then, or a minchas chareva, which is a mincha that does not have oil, or it does have oil, but it's not baked, so then all the Kohanim share. That's Pasuk Yud. V'chol mincha b'lulav v'shemen v'chareva l'chol b'nei aron t'yeh ish kechiv. It's split equally. And when it comes to a minchas mafe, marcheshes, and machvas, so then the Kohen HaMakriv brings it, gets to eat it. That's Pasuk Tes. V'chol mincha sher te'afeh batanur v'chol na'asa b'marcheshes v'al machvas l'Kohen HaMakriv osa lo sihiyah. So he says, what's the reason for that? What's the tam of the mitzvah? And he says, well, the tam of the mitzvah is that minchas, machvas, marcheshes, and mafe tanur are a lot of work, and therefore it makes sense, it's equitable that the Kohen who does all that work should get to eat it, whereas a minchas soles and a minchas chareva don't really involve much work, and therefore it's split equally among the Kohanim. And he says, that's al pi pshat. But al pi drash, all Kohanim split all menachos equally, meaning to say it's divided among the mishmeres equally. And he says that that's just because it ensures shalom bayis. If some people are getting more than the others, there would be machlokas and the like. And here too, by the way, the pshat and the drash very much relate. I wish I had time to explain this medrash because it's really beautiful. But what I want to point out, which is so striking, is the following. Notice how A, here, the Ramban is very interested in the pshat, even though this is halachic section. B, notice how he gives a tam al pi pshat, meaning say tamei mitzvos is even relevant al pi pshuto shel mikra. Just like, for example, you see Rishonim explaining what the equity and the tam of ayin tachas ayin would be if it were literally true. Look at the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim. Nevertheless, that wasn't what was practiced. So you would think, what's the point of offering tamei mitzvos for the pshat? We should offer tamei mitzvos for the drash, meaning to say what was normative. The Ramban says what was normative, what was actually done is, of course, what the Medrash says. But still, there's a value. And the answer is, again, very bekitzer, is when you look at these psukim, you're not going to understand the depth of the drash without understanding the pshat. Because what was the drash telling you? What's the reason why all menachos are split equally? Says the Ramban, shalom bayis. Now, if shalom bayis is true, only when everybody's equally deserving, then you don't need such a chiddush of shalom bayis. The chiddush of shalom bayis is, even though some people deserve more and some people deserve less, we're going to split it equally so as to preserve shalom. Now, you only get that once you A, understand the pshat, don't just read the pasuk and the halacha pidrash, and B, go ahead and ask what the tam of the mitzvah is al pi pshat, and then that will give you a whole new understanding of what drash is. So even when it comes to medrash, like we said before, the Ratzon Hashem, the MS, the Pnimius Adavar only comes about when you understand both. And if someone only learns the drash without missing the pshat, in this case, they'll miss the point of the mitzvah. Because they won't chap the point is shalom bias. Because they won't chap that this has anything to do with shalom bias, because they didn't understand the pshat. You're not going to understand the pshat if you don't have the drash. You're not going to understand the drash if you don't understand the pshat. They're not just two separate spheres and separate realms. They're integrated. It's only for the through the two of them that we understand the Ratzon Hashem. We understand the message of the Torah. We've seen how this is true with respect to the narrative portions, with respect to the halachic portions, with respect to Tamei Mitzvos and the like. And that's why it's so important to understand the Torah on so many levels. That's why great Mefarshim, like the Ramban, go ahead and integrate Pshat, Remez, Drush, and Sod in the same Pasuk. Because all of them are needed to understand the Torah to the extent possible. And if we only focus on the Drash, we're going to miss the point. If we only focus on the Pshat, we're going to miss the point. If we want to understand the Torah, if we want to get to the Pnimius and the Chitzonios, we have to really study both Be'ion Rav. So that ends the first half of today's shiur, as well as the second half of today's shiur, because we don't have time for it. But you have a number of makoros in your source sheets to see on that.